We're taking you behind the scenes with entrepreneurs that run product-based businesses, people that were once in your shoes. Our TSBC alumni, speakers, and friends will shed light on growth strategies, resources, and inspiration to help you scale your creative business. Hi, everyone. I'm Katie Hunt, the founder of Trade Show Bootcamp, and welcome to another episode of Proof to Product. Today, I'm interviewing Kyle Dury of Power and Light Press, a ship-shaped letterpress print shop from New Mexico, built to handle all of life's messy emotions. On today's episode, we covered a lot of ground, including the pros and cons of different trade shows, how Kyle has grown her team, and why she makes travel and downtime an important part of her life. We also talked about how Kyle has donated over $80,000 to Planned Parenthood through the selling of her Stand With Planned Parenthood tote bags, how she did it, her motivations for giving back, and how she dealt with some public backlash. Kyle's a talented artist, and it was a lot of fun to hear her story today. I hope you enjoy it as well.
Hey, Kyle. Thanks for joining me today.
Hi, Katie. Thanks for having me.
Of course. It's such a pleasure to have you on. So tell us about your company, Power and Light Press, and the products that you make.
So we are primarily a letterpress greeting card company. That's how we started. It's still our bread and butter. We have branched out into some other gift items in the last year, but still the greeting cards are kind of what keep us whole. I started the company in 2009 in Portland, Oregon, and it was just a solo gig for the first, 6 years, basically. And it's grown a lot in the last year or so, which has kind of breathed a whole new life into the business. And it's super exciting.
How so? More people, more products?
More people, more input, more delegation, more, risks. And stuff I've been like terrified of doing up until, I don't know, you reach a breaking point and you're like, things need to change.
Totally. I know, it's funny how we put ourselves in that situation where we think, no, I can't let go of these things, or no, I'm the only one that can touch that. Until you really, truly hit that breaking point where you say, okay, I can't do it all.
Something's got to give. Totally. And I was holding myself back also, by being this kind of, it wasn't really a micromanagey thing, but I was just like, I am a printer and I want to keep my hands on press. I don't want to just like train someone else to do that so I can focus on admin. So that's been the struggle of like maintaining some creative involvement and production involvement, because that's why I started the business. So as it's grown, that's been kind of something I've struggled with, is trying to what is my role,
Yeah. Well, and it's a fine balance, right? You need to balance between what your interests are, what your passion is, but then also what's the best use of your time? Like what is the highest and best use of you spending your energy and effort on? So did you go to school for printmaking and art?
I did. I went to school and studied, it was a really small liberal arts school, and I studied, visual art. And my focus was in drawing and printmaking. Fine art printmaking, like etching and, mostly etching. and letterpress was something I discovered several years after I graduated. And it just struck a chord instantly. I took a class kind of on a whim and fell in love with it and kind of didn't look back from there.
Nice. Did you know that you always wanted to use those skills in that school time, like the education, to be your own boss, to create your own business?
Not necessarily. I mean, I always thought I was going to be an artist, a showing, practicing artist. So I guess self-employed in that way was always important to me, but the idea of owning a business was never on my radar until I was like, I need to make a living and I don't want to have a side hustle anymore. I want this to be my thing. And that's when I just kind of jumped into it.
And did you know, so you said you wanted to be an artist, but were you thinking like one-off custom pieces? I mean, now you have a full-fledged product line, that's different.
Things shifted when I discovered letterpress. I'd been showing, like drawing and showing in galleries for a couple of years. And I kind of hit a wall with that, the art world, and it wasn't feeling like the right place for me anymore. But I still knew that I wanted to remain creative and use my hands in my work. And when I took this letterpress class, it clicked and I was like, okay, this is it felt like a new start in a way that I could use my hands to make work that could actually, make me make a living for me. And it wasn't quite that clear at the time, but it was like, it was the seed, as I stepped away from the art world to kind of pivot into something more commercial, but still creative. Yeah. And that was really eye-opening for me to kind of see that I could combine those two things in one.
I love that you mentioned it wasn't necessarily clear at the beginning when you were making that transition. Yeah. I felt the same exact way when I was starting boot camp. I was in a corporate job and I had my stationery line. And looking back, I can say, oh my God, of course. Like, boot camp is like the perfect hybrid of my business expertise, but an industry I love. But at the time, you know, I kind of thought I was crazy.
Yeah, a little
bit. Like, everyone else around thought I was, yeah, they're like, what are you doing? You know? And so it's funny how hindsight is definitely 2020.
Oh, for sure.
Look back and see the path that we took actually got us to where we need to be.
Yeah. So. I felt like I was just flailing around trying to find something that, you know, felt meaningful to me. But, you know, looking back, I'm like, oh, of course, that made sense.
right. So I guess that goes to show if anyone's listening that's feeling like, gosh, I'm not sure where I'm headed. Just trust your gut.
Just go with it.
Keep moving.
Yep.
Good. Well, what's your favorite part about running your own business?
I mean, I do love being my own boss. I love setting whatever weird schedule I want to stick to. As the business grows, it's becoming more of a 9-to-5 because I'm finding that's like, when everyone else is doing business. So it's not quite as freewheeling as it was in the beginning. But, you know, I really, having flexibility in my schedule and having, you know, not having to answer to anyone and having a team that I love and feel inspired by, all those things are things that I love about kind of having my own business. And, you know, just being able to be creative. When I step back and think that, like, I make a living and help support other people's lives by making like stupid greeting cards, I'm constantly blown away by that.
It's pretty incredible and powerful, right?
Yeah. Yep.
and powerful in a way that just makes you feel so good and feel so happy about it. So tell us about your team. How many people do you have and what are their roles?
So we have, not including me, I've got 4 girls right now. 2 are full-time and 2 are part-time. And we've got, Jamie is kind of a production manager. She does a lot of the printing and a lot of just the kind of helping to organize inventory and reorders and things like that. And then Natalie is also full-time and she floats a lot. Like, she does a lot of production, but also does, like, we're starting to get back into custom work a little bit, like dipping a toe in the water after several years away. So she's kind of helping to, you know, structure that. And then Alex and Alyssa both help with printing and production. So we've been trying to define roles as everyone settles in to regular work at the shop. And I'm trying to kind of figure out what I need help with and what I want to maintain on my end. So it's definitely a work in progress. And we're all pretty cross-trained. Like, everyone knows how to fill and ship an order, you know, because right now Jamie and I are in Vegas and Natalie's out of town. So Alex and Alyssa are back home and they're, you know, managing the retail orders and wholesale orders right now. So that's super important to me because as much as I like to have my self-designed schedule and leave town every now and then, I want them to feel like they can do that too.
Yeah.
So I want to support them when an opportunity comes up that they need to leave for 3 weeks. So the fact that we can all kind of step in and take care of the stuff that needs to get taken care of on a daily basis is important to me.
I love that you shared that. I just recently was on vacation for a week, completely off the grid, like no internet, no cell phone, anything like that. And this is the first time I didn't feel anxious about leaving.
Yes.
Because I have an amazing team backing me up and I trust them so much. And I knew that if anything came up while I was gone, that they'd either handle it or they'd let people know we'd get back to them when I got back. Or like, I had no fears that balls would be dropped or things would go awry. And it sounds like you have the same situation with your team.
It's so important and it makes such a difference because
to
have a team you can trust that you have confidence in for when you can't be there. And that's, for me, that's kind of the whole point of having backup. It's like, we support each other. We make this machine work together.
Absolutely. And I love how supportive you are of them. I mean, life happens. People need time away or whatever it might be. I think that it's great that you're empowering them to do what they need to do in their personal lives.
That's been so important to me just, you know, through my whole adult, young adult life, is to have the freedom to make those choices when there's something I need to do for myself personally, whether it's go out of town for a while or just take some time for myself or, you know, explore other interests like that. I know how important that is to me. And so when that comes up for people in my life, I need to support that too.
Absolutely. I agree 100%. The other thing about that is it's going to give them a better working environment. It's going to keep them happy. They're going to want to stay, and it builds loyalty without a lot of effort. It's just being human and helping them, you know? Mm-hmm. So anyhow, switching gears a little bit. You were recently in Las Vegas for the Pool Trade Show. How has that compared to other shows you've done? Because you've done New York Now and NSS and other shows, mm-hmm. you know, what are you seeing amongst the different shows you're doing?
Well, Pool's a really different show. It's primarily apparel and fashion.
Yep.
And there is a smaller section kind of for accessories and smaller gift items because so many clothing boutiques are now stocking gift items. Mm-hmm. So there's, you know, there's only a handful of greeting card stationery companies there. So it creates a really different environment. The buyers are different. The vendors are different. And I think that's really fun and exciting. It's been a good show. It's the second time I've done it. We did it in February this year. And I went in, it had been on my radar for, you know, 6 months or so. And I finally decided to just jump on it. Because it's a lower, like it's a less risk, it's less expensive. Yeah. They have walls for you. Like you basically just show up with like a couple boxes of samples, and set up. So it's really easy, which I appreciate after schlepping crates and stuff to New York so many times. It's a different kind of show, but I was interested to see kind of how it would shake out, and I've been surprised by it both times that I've done it now. It's kind of like a sleeper show. It's like not, I mean, there's a lot of people there, but it's a huge show. So they're spread out. So it doesn't feel like really thick foot traffic, but people are placing orders. And it's a lot of new accounts. There are shops and buyers that I've never interacted with before. So it's a new audience. And that's very cool to me. Like of the orders that I wrote this week, you know, probably 90% of them are new accounts.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And that's really, in my opinion, the main goal of going to the show, to meet new contacts, because you can still further those relationships when you get home.
Exactly.
To that point about having it be a different audience, do you feel that when you talk about your products to a new audience that's not as familiar with greeting cards in the paper world, that you have to kind of approach it in a different manner? I mean, I assume there's a little bit more educating about minimum order quantities and all these different things that, you know, maybe at NSS people just know because they're part of the industry.
People seem actually pretty savvy, I think because fashion is such a specific, like, I don't know anything about the fashion world, but I feel like it's pretty like cutthroat, and there's like, I don't know, it feels like higher stakes than paper, which is like, of course. So when people come in to the booth and ask about opening orders, also the price point is so much lower for paper. So
I was going to say your opening order is going to be quite different than somebody selling apparel.
I just raised the minimum for an opening order this year, and I was a little nervous about it. But no one batted an eye. They're like, oh, that's fine. That's like literally two items if I was buying clothes, you know?
Excellent.
So it really wasn't, you know, I had to explain letterpress a little bit more, but I also realized that the fact that our cards are letterpress printed really didn't matter to these buyers, which was kind of nice because I've kind of been wondering where letterpress fits in with like who we are as a business. Like it's how we run our business. It's how we make our product. But in terms of marketing to a bigger audience, it's not like the number one thing we mention. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that
not the biggest part of your story.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, of course, it is a major part, but it as our audience grows and people are less familiar with letterpress, you know, I think we get better traction by just saying like we make funny cards, and that connects with people more immediately than we make letterpress greeting cards. People are like, what's that? And it's a moment, you know, you can explain it and most people are excited about it, but it's not really a selling point for most people.
Yeah. I feel like there's different audiences. You know, there's definitely those that cherish and love the different print methods, but they already understand it.
Yeah.
They already know what it is. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to explain it to them.
Right.
But more for mass market, they do seem less interested in the different styles or the art behind it. Mm-hmm. They're more interested in how it makes them feel with the sentiment or the message on the card.
Exactly. Yep.
Or if it's, you know, other products, how the clothes feel or the candle smells or whatever.
Exactly.
So I want to talk about a project you worked on. In the last year, you launched a tote bag that you called the Stand with Planned Parenthood tote bag, where you donated a portion of the proceeds to Planned parenthood. Now, I want to talk about this quite a bit in different ways, but before we dive into your motivations and how you decided to move forward with this, can you tell us how much you've raised from the sale of these bags so far?
Yeah. So we've changed to like making donations every couple of months, like letting things pile up and then making another big donations. But at this point, we're at over $80,000.
Wow.
That we've donated since beginning of the year. And most of that was right up front just because of the nature of how this thing kind of went off the rails. We're still selling them. We're still making donations. We're kind of letting it build up over a couple months. And then, so we'll probably make another sizable donation in September.
Nice. That's gonna feel great. I mean, to know that you're giving back to a cause that's very important to you. So tell us a little bit of the backstory here. What prompted you to create and then sell these bags?
It was that the doldrums, the dark days right after the election when, you know, I think many of us were just kind of staggering around. I know that I was going into work and not knowing what I was doing there. It's like, what? Yeah. None of this matters. Like, this country has far bigger fish to fry than, you know, greeting cards. And I was just feeling deflated and defeated and didn't really know how to respond to the state of our country. And that feeling stuck around for a while, but at the middle of December or so, I was just working on some new products to release in February. And, you know, I just had my sketchbook out and I was just doodling, like, alongside other like really dumb jokes. There's just this phrase kind of kept coming through my head of like that souvenir t-shirt, you know, like I went to Key West and all I got was this lousy t-shirt.
Yeah.
That phrase, but like I kept coming back to Planned Parenthood, just knowing that it was kind of on the chopping block with the new administration. And I mean, it came out very organically. I started kind of sketching out some ideas and I didn't know if it was going to go anywhere, but I just sat with it for a couple of days and then finally tightened it up and got the message to a point, got the design to a point that I started to share it with a few friends for feedback. And it felt like there was something there. And I was like, you know, we've never done tote bags before. We've done t-shirts, but not with like huge success. A tote bag seemed like just a good vehicle for this message.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I ordered like 25 tote bags off some discount website and screen printed a handful of these just after Christmas. And I listed them online, like I put them up in the shop and then posted them on Instagram and Facebook and really expected that, you know, they were pre-sales. I was like, let's see how many we sell and then we'll print that many and then we'll move on.
Right.
And it just blew up instantly. And, you know, within that first hour, we were like, we can't do this. Like, we don't have the screen printing set up to accommodate this quantity.
Right.
It just took off so fast and it surprised all of us. It was not expected. I really thought, I was like, oh, we'll sell 100 of them maybe and like make a nice little donation at the end of the year to Planned Parenthood.
Right.
And then we'll feel good about ourselves going into the next year. And then it just turned into this huge thing that we adapted to and learned from very quickly.
In addition to actually having to produce that volume of product, you had quite a bit of publicity around these bags. Was the publicity and the orders and just all of it, was that exciting to you or was that overwhelming or a mix of both?
It was a mix of both. It was mostly overwhelming.
Yeah.
It was exciting because it made me realize how much we were going to be able to give to Planned Parenthood. And that's an organization I really believe in. That felt really good. Everything else was completely overwhelming. The amount of attention is something I wasn't prepared for or not. It's not something I thrive in, is, you know, the spotlight. Right.
You're a pretty private person.
And just, you know, it's such a divisive issue. And so on top of just the orders and the kind of logistics to manage in those first few days, there was also this very, very heated, trolly thread on my personal Facebook page. Cause I posted it on my personal page originally. Cause I was like, I don't know. No one ever looks at my Power and Light Facebook page. So I'll do it on my personal page and share it with my friends. It just got shared from there. And so there was a lot of differing viewpoints, of course. It's an incredibly divisive issue and people feel really passionate about, well, I say issue. It's like, you know, of course the conversation became about abortion. mm-hmm. you know, Planned Parenthood. The point of the bag was to advocate for all of the other services that Planned Parenthood provides, because those right. are really, really essential services. And I also believe that abortion is an important service that they offer. But mm-hmm. I was trying to change the conversation away from abortion, because that's what it always comes back to.
Right.
And of course, that's what this, all of the kind of publicity and the negative publicity came back to was abortion. So it was, you know, I had like a pit in my stomach for, you know, I mean, I was going to say 5 days, but it was more like 5 weeks where I was just like, couldn't face the internet. And it was uncomfortable. It was really yeah. uncomfortable. I was kind of really frayed emotionally and exhausted and stressed. But at the same time, it was all great. Like, it was all for a good cause. And I still believe in it. And I am really proud of what we've done and what my team has
managed to do. You've done an incredible job. And the fact that you've been able to donate so much, it's impressive and it's admirable. Would you do it again if given the opportunity and given both the pros and cons that you've been through?
Definitely. I mean, because now we're equipped for it. Like, we figured out how to fulfill orders like that.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, to be able to make an impact like that financially and just within the public, I would definitely do it again. I'm not going to force it, because I feel like that idea wasn't like, oh, here's this gem that I'm going to release into the world. It was just like any other product we release. It's like, I don't know, this might hit or it might not.
Yeah.
So it's not a direction that I'm actively taking the business in to do more political work. But mm-hmm. if a good idea comes up, then yeah, we're going to be ready for it.
Nice. How, you mentioned the trolls, you mentioned how hard it was. Thank you for sharing that, by the way. How did you handle that? I mean, did you just tune it out for a while? Did you respond to people? Did you just ignore it?
I tuned it out for like 2 days, and then I got too curious. Like, I knew that stuff was unfolding online, and I avoided it for a little bit, and then I just got too curious and I wanted to dive in, but I didn't engage anyone. I mean, what's amazing about the internet is that everyone else does that for you. You know, you kind of like set something free, and then people from all sides are all over it. So
yeah,
I kind of felt like I've done my part. We got this conversation stirred up a little bit, and I can kind of sit back. And I also didn't want to drag in people from my team at all. You know, like we didn't have to have a sit down, but I kind of encouraged people who are close to me and people who are work in the shop to not engage in that stuff online. I just didn't feel like it was going to be constructive or healthy. Right. And I didn't want that stress on any of them. I didn't want that stress on me. So I mostly, you know, I would tune in every now and then and follow along and see what people are saying. And I only chimed in if there was something that felt very personal, like personally right. directed to me. Otherwise, I just kept my mouth shut and let it, you know, let that fire grow.
Yeah. It's so hard. And I didn't mean to take this conversation into like a, you know, online bashing sort of way, but that's a challenging situation, and I admire you for, you know, sticking through it and doing what you felt was right and keeping the product going and all that.
I learned a lot. It really made me solidify my own opinions. Like, yeah. I made this product and I better stand behind it and know what yeah. I'm talking about, you know, because I was being challenged. And I think that True. Was really useful for me to not just like throw some meme up online and then walk away. It's like, I really, you know, even though I didn't fully engage online in the conversation on my own time, it really made me think long and hard about what I believe in and, you know, mm-hmm. what I'm prepared to defend.
Absolutely. Well, I admire you for your conviction and for doing everything. And I applaud you too for as much as you've raised. I think that's phenomenal. We recently had some discussions in our online alumni forum, and people are really interested in doing something similar to what you've done, creating a product that benefits some sort of charity or cause. We've got people that are doing things for children or for, you know, other political things or for schools or all these different options escape me right now, but you know, a wide variety of mm-hmm. causes. And they're curious about logistically how to do this. You know, particularly there are some questions have come up about people that want to sell these products to both the retail market and the wholesale market. Can you walk us through how you structured this mm-hmm. tote and the donations? Was there anything you needed to do kind of on the business side before taking this tote to market?
I definitely flew by the seat of my pants on this one because it took off so fast in ways I wasn't at all prepared for.
Right.
You know, I was already 2 days in, and it was like holiday season when I launched it. So I was like 2 or 3 days in when I finally was like, I need to call my accountant immediately. And thankfully, she's also a friend and was available and not just like off on end of year vacation. And we talked it through on the phone. We kind of made a game plan of like how to correct the things I'd already done wrong and how to plan for the next steps. So I think, I mean, get organized. Like if you have an accountant, talk to your accountant, figure out the best structure for how to, you know, whatever percentage you're going to be donating from the sale, you know, make sure you're covering your own costs, materials and labor, and, you know, just get that stuff set. Yeah. Just talk to your accountant about a good way to kind of structure how you make those donations and make sure that they're tax deductible. Cause I kind of made a big error right at the beginning and donated to an arm of the organization that wasn't tax deductible. And that, you know, that ended up being a big learning experience.
Oh, wow.
So just, you know, do a little homework but also don't overthink it. You know, it's like, you know, if you work with a rep, you're used to making that payment commission payment every month, you know, just get organized and kind of figure out a system that makes sense or is already aligned with some other system you already have in place to just mm-hmm. to keep those payments organized. And, you know, maybe setting a time frame would be helpful. You know, like maybe you try doing this sort of thing for 3 months and see how it goes. And if it's not working out for whatever reason, mm-hmm. then mix it up and change it. We recently just changed the structure to like change the percentage structure that we're donating because it ceased to be sustainable. We were donating 100% of proceeds and that was awesome, but it's really taken over a huge part of our business mm-hmm. and we just can't keep doing that anymore. And so we recently restructured the percentage that we're donating from each bag, and it feels fine. It feels good. And I was worried we'd get a lot of pushback on that. And I was overthinking it. No one has noticed. No one's complained to us. And now we're able to kind of focus a bit more on the whole business and not just this crazy side project that has taken over the business. So, you know, just it's got to make sense. It's got to make sense for your business because all the goodwill in the world, if it ends up putting you out of business, maybe it wasn't the best idea.
That is great advice. And thank you too for sharing that things have changed as you've gone on. I do think these things sometimes take on a life of their own, and whether it's, you know, the totes or something else that you're doing. And it's always good to reassess and see, because you do want to make sure that it's still, that it's not a, you can still do good in the world without it being a drain on your business or without it being, you know, negatively impacting the sustainability of your company. Okay. I have, changing topics a bit, I've really admired how you have structured your business to work around your life rather than your life around your business. In the past, you know, travel's been a really big important thing for you. How do you make that a priority in your life? And how has that changed maybe over the years?
Yeah, I've always kind of felt like travel, and I don't mean like jet setting, but like road trips and just getting out of town has kind of been like my form of therapy as mm-hmm. an adult. It's always been a really important part of my life to kind of resettle me and to re-inspire me, to just make me feel like a complete human being.
Yeah.
It's just like getting a change in perspective, getting out on the road for even just a couple of days, but preferably for much longer than that. I really kind of start to come into my own when I have a lot of time to myself and experiencing new places and people. So that's, as an adult, that's just always been a huge part of my life. And I have wanted to maintain that in my business to some degree, if only because it's like, that's how I get creative. You know,
yeah.
I'm not someone who draws every day, who just has a daily practice of doodling and, you know, idea generating. Like for me, it comes in bigger chunks, mm-hmm. more kind of scattered throughout the year. And so to nurture that, I kind of need to get out of town and change my perspective and my surroundings. So I just treat that as like part of my, you know, self-care practice, I guess. Mm-hmm. And it's definitely changed over the years. You know, several years ago, I spent an entire year on the road where I was traveling in my movable type truck.
Yep.
And I was teaching workshops all over the country and living in the truck. And that was, you know, to the extreme, like, you know, one of the best years of my life. I learned so much about myself and about my practice and what I'm interested in. And then right after that year on the road is when I moved to New Mexico. And I did a couple shorter tours in that same truck after I got to New Mexico. But mostly I moved there so I could kind of put my head down and grow the business, which sounds weird to like move to the middle of nowhere to get ahead in business. But it was important to me to, I've always felt very strongly about lowering your overhead as a way to, you know, make it. And Portland, Oregon, where I had been living, was just getting far too expensive and busy. And I couldn't see the business growing the way I wanted it to if I stayed there. So mm-hmm. my partner and I moved to New Mexico and kind of set up a new life there. And I love it there. It's beautiful. It's cheap. It's sunny all the time. It's like this magical, weird wonderland, but it's very remote. We live in a very small town in a remote part of the state. And so I need to leave every now and then. And that, so in a different way, I still need to get out on the road for, you know, every 2 months or so. Sometimes it's going to a trade show, which isn't exactly like a relaxing way to travel, but I still get to go to a new place or catch up with old friends, get some time to myself. And if I can drive to a place, all the better, because I love that time alone in the car to just think and look around the landscape and things like that.
What do you do in the car? Do you just look around and think, or do you listen to music? Do you listen to podcasts? What do you do when you have that solo time?
A little of everything. Yeah. I mean, I definitely listen to podcasts a lot if I'm feeling tired at all. That's the one way to make me not fall asleep on the road.
Yeah.
But I also like, I go for hours in silence and just in my own thoughts. It's really such a good time for me to reflect and step away from my life, like my personal life, from my work life, and just kind of refigure myself out, you know?
Yeah.
So that's still really an important part of my life. And as the business has grown, the way that I travel has grown a lot too. And I don't have as much time as I did a couple of years ago to just, you know, take off for 3 weeks. And, you know, usually when I would travel, I would like do some craft fairs or something on the way, cause I'm not just like burning through money, but even that's changed. Like I'm not doing as many craft fairs. And so I don't know, I'm not really sure what the next year or so is going to look like, but it's a thing that I know is really important to me, and it kind of helps keep me healthy. So I'm going to continue to value that.
Well, I feel the same way about me. Mm-hmm. I go on solo retreat. I need quiet time. I need quiet time to recharge in my business. I need quiet time to recharge from family stuff I'm doing. And so I go on one or two solo retreats a year. Mm-hmm. And I don't go far typically. You know, I try to stay somewhat close to home just because I want to maximize the amount of time I'm actually like thinking and brainstorming. And I do work. Sometimes I read books, whatever it is. So I'll typically stay within an hour or two of home. But I find those retreats so valuable from a personal standpoint of self-care because, yes, I do a lot of work and things while I'm there and a lot of brainstorming, but it gets you out of the day-to-day life.
Yes.
And the day-to-day hustle of the business, the day-to-day hustle of my family. And I'm just focused on me mm-hmm. and I'm focused on the business, but in a different way.
Yeah. Yeah. You get away from the minutiae of all the stuff that like fills your day, but typically it distracts you from like the bigger picture, you know, where you want to take things, what new things you want to work on. And that I've always found really important. I agree with you about getting away even just for 2 days to kind of check out and step back a little bit. I think it's so important.
It's important. I think I valued that more as I've gotten older too. I don't think I realized that about myself, that I'm kind of an introvert extrovert. I've always thought of myself as an extrovert, but I'm realizing more and more that no, I've got introvert tendencies too, of where I need to, mm-hmm. you know, I need that quiet time mm-hmm. and less stimulation and overwhelm and noise just to recharge.
Yeah, less distraction.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So what advice would you give to somebody wanting to start a product-based business?
Like just jump in. it sounds silly. And like, you know, I am a person who really can't plan too much. You know, I can plan to a certain point, but then if I don't know what I'm planning for, like, I'm dead in the water. So I'm always a proponent of, like, just try it. You know, like, you don't have to have 15 grand in savings. You don't have to have 2 grand in savings, as I learned. just get started. Like, start with what you have and grow it from there. I mentioned a minute ago, like, I really think overhead is like a really, really important part of getting started, and keeping your overhead low, especially in the beginning.
Yeah.
It makes such a huge difference when you're not stressed out because your rent is $1,500. You know, like, you don't need that right away. Like, start in your closet or wherever you have some space, and then just kind of grow as it demands.
Yeah.
I'm a big supporter of, like, not overthinking things too much, you know, trying it out, seeing if it's even right for you. And then if it is, like, pursue it a little further. Yeah.
And to that same point, if something's not right, it's okay to switch gears.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, you know, learning as much as you can, but not learning too much, because you need, you know, like, I did a couple apprenticeships before I started my own business because I wanted to learn the process of how you run a letterpress business. And that was invaluable. You know, I wouldn't trade that experience for the world. But at a certain point, I was like, I need to figure the rest of this out on my own now. Like, yeah. I'm not an expert yet. And it's going to be a long time until I am, if ever. But that kind of experiential on the ground knowledge that you can only teach yourself, I think, is really important.
That's a great answer.
Don't be too prepared.
Yes. Well, you know, I talk to a lot of people that come through Paper Camp or eCourse, and, like, they want all the answers. They want all the answers now. And what I always tell them is, we're going to give you a lot of information. We're going to give you a lot of things so you can create your own path and make your own plan, because what works for you is not necessarily going to work for the person sitting next to you or whatever it might be. So there's a lot of truth in that. I think there are a lot of people nowadays that want just the playbook or whatever it might be. And the fact of the matter is, even with a playbook, you still got to go through the trial and error of learning and figuring out what works best for you.
Exactly. So. Yeah.
So what's next for you and for Power and Light Press?
Well, we're kind of outgrowing our current space. It's the shop that I started renting as soon as I moved to New Mexico. Mm-hmm. It was more than enough space when it was just me, and now that there's five of us, we're kind of busting at the seams. Not to mention these, like, tote bags, like, take up, you know, like, we have need another small warehouse for them. So it's gotten the physical space issue has been something we're keenly aware of these days.
Yeah.
So I don't know. We're looking to expand, looking around other, like, studio options around town, which is, like, in a small town, there's just not a ton of options.
Yeah.
So we're trying to figure that out right now of what we can do to, like, physically grow. And we also want to start doing workshops in our space. And right now we're just not really set up to do that in our current space. So that's kind of, that's kind of what we're focusing on right now is maybe moving into a larger space. And we've got some really fun new products that we're releasing this week, like at Pool and at New York Now. We're heading there tomorrow.
Can't wait to see.
Yeah, we kind of came back to doing cards. We'd been focusing on gift a lot this last year, which was exciting to do new products like that. But then kind of returning to our roots, if you will.
Yes.
And just, like, we just printed up a bunch of, like, really, like, silly, inappropriate cards this time around, which is really fun. I forget how much love greeting cards. Like, there's a reason that the business started with those. And so really excited to release those.
Love it.
And we'll have them available at retail shortly once we get them up on our website. We're working on a new website, which is very exciting.
There's lots of big things.
So we're just trying to, this was a huge year of growth for us, and having a team means that we can actually make these steps. You know, before, this was stuff I was like, oh yeah, I'd like a new website, but, like, I don't know how to do that, and I can't afford to pay a pro to do it. So now, like, being able to, like, take on these projects within our own team has been really empowering, and has, I think, been it's been very motivating, pushing us forward.
Well, good luck with all of that. That's a lot of amazing stuff.
Thank you.
So where can people find you online?
So we are reasonably active on Instagram at Power and Light Press. And our website's currently under construction, but it is and will continue to be powerandlightpress.com.
Awesome. And we'll include your link to your shop in the show notes as well for anyone that's looking to check out your stuff.
Perfect.
Or buy the totes.
Or buy the totes. We still have them.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. Well, Kyle, thank you so much for coming on today. It was a pleasure to talk to you and just so fun to hear all the new changes and things that you've been doing too. I'm so happy about your growth. And
thank you, Katie.
It's just been fun.
I really appreciate it. And it's been really fun to chat.
All right.
Hey friends, a little fun fact for you today. Did you know that most of the brands that we interview here on this podcast are Trade Show Bootcamp alumni? Some of them are speakers and some are friends, but the large majority of the people I've talked to on this podcast are alumni. They have come through and attended our Paper Camp conference or our Paper Camp e-course. And both of these programs are aimed at helping stationery gift companies launch or refine their wholesale program. So we talk about everything from developing their product and ensuring it's ready for wholesale, to launching it to the market and working with sales reps, getting in front of buyers, and all the way down to exhibiting at trade shows, wholesale trade shows, similar to New York Now and the National Stationery Show. We cover it all because we want you to be educated and informed in how you're making decisions for your business. Now, many of you have been asking, when's the next program? When is Paper Camp going to run again? And I'm excited to tell you that we opened registration for our 2018 program. Paper Camp Conference is only going to run once in 2018, and the dates are March 1st and 2nd, and we'll be in Los Angeles. Historically, I've run this program twice a year for the last several years, but I'm cooking up some other fun things for the fall, so we are only going to offer Paper Camp in person and live one time in 2018. And if you want to get more information about how the live program compares with our e-course program, head on over to tradeshowcamp.com/papercamp, and you can learn more and also grab your seat. Now, I should mention, like all of our Paper Camp conferences, this is an intimate event. We keep the numbers small so that you can get your questions answered and you can have time networking with our speakers as well as the other attendees. So seats are very limited and we sell out every time. And since we're only offering this once next year, I really encourage you to grab your seat if you intend on coming. More information is available at tradeshowcamp.com/papercamp.
Proof to Product is brought to you by Trade Show Bootcamp and hosted by me, Katie Hunt. Since 2011, TSBC has worked with hundreds of product-based businesses to help them up-level, scale, and build profitable, sustainable companies. You can find our show notes and additional resources at prooftoproduct.com. And if you like what you heard today, please head over to Apple Podcasts to leave a 5-star review and subscribe. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back next week with a new episode.